Welcome to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. SDPB is celebrating the people, places, and experiences that make our state unique in the Landscapes of South Dakota series. And today, as part of that series, we're at Oglala Lakota College on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Oglala Lakota College is one of the first tribally controlled colleges in the country. It was first chartered in 1971 as the Lakota Higher Education Center, and in 1983, the college was accredited as a four-year degree-granting institution. The college is dedicated to rebuilding the Lakota Nation through education by teaching Lakota culture and language and preparing students to live and work in a multicultural year. Thomas Shortbowl has been an important part of Oglala Lakota College for some 25 years. He first served as president in the late 70s when it was a community college. He returned to lead the institution in 1995 and has served in that capacity ever since. And President Shortbowl, thanks for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to go back to the early days of the founding of what is now Oglala Lakota College. What was the education situation at that time?
Well, the big issue that I want people to know about tribal colleges is that, you know, we've only been in the arena of higher education for about the last 50 years. And the reason for that is that when we were placed on reservation, in our case in 1887 on the Pine Ridge Reservation, there was a mentality that we weren't smart enough to be professional people. So what the American people wanted to do is to civilize us, you know, bring Christianity. They would teach us up through the eighth grade, and then we'd be sent off to trade schools. And there were a lot of them in the United States, Hampton Institute, Chamawa. And the most famous of these trade schools was Carlisle Indian School, where the great Jim Thorpe went to school, one of the great Olympians. There to be trained to be ranch work, farm work, blacksmiths, shoemakers for the women, seamstresses and cooks, and actually domestics. They were also trained for that. So there wasn't any effort at all to get us into the arena of higher education. And the mentality was we weren't smart enough to be professional people. So as a result of that, there was it wasn't until the 1950s that you started to see a handful of Indian people go on to college. A couple of those people was the founder of our college, Gerald Onefeather, Calvin Jumping Bull. But everything changed in the 1960s when Lyndon Johnson was president of the United States. He instituted a program that the war on poverty, and so rather than keep people down, it was to enable people. So when I graduated from high school in 1965, I was encouraged to go to college. So I went to the University of South Dakota. There were 20 of us that entered as incoming students, Indian students. Out of that 20 students, only two of us graduated, and I was one of them. And I always equate the problem with social adjustment. And there's a great mystery in the United States in regards to Harvard University. In the 1600s, when they were chartered as a college, one of the charting languages that they would educate young Indian men. And so in the 1600s, I think they brought somewhere like 40 to 50 people to Harvard. And out of those, about half of them died. And to this day, no one knows why they died. They just perished. I believe it was social adjustment, going from one environment to totally foreign environment. And we do have historical incidents where some of the warriors, when they were put in jail, if it was 3 months, 6 months, actually perished because, you know, just going to that foreign environment resulted in them not even able to survive. So our college came into existence in 1971. It was to educate Indian people for the jobs that exist on the reservations, and we've had great success. Of the over 200 teaching positions on the reservation, now 100 of them are filled by Indian people. Of those Indian people, 86% of those teachers are graduates of our college. Likewise with nursing, we have a two-year degree that our students can test to be a registered nurse. Of the 70 registered nurse positions on the reservation, 80% of them are filled by Indian women, and 80% of those Indian women are graduates of our college. So that's the rationale. Again, it was to have credentialing our students for jobs that exist on the reservation.
Now, the idea behind the college part of it, as I understand, and I mentioned this, was preparing students, teaching them from the Lakota perspective. What is that, and what does that mean?
Well, you know, Sitting Bull made one of the great statements. He said, you need to take what's best out of the white man's world, and you need to take what's best out of the Indian world. And so what we take best out of the white man's world is the ability to get an education and get jobs that you could either get on the reservation or off the reservation. You're a teacher, you can work wherever you want. So that's the aspect of taking what's best in the white man's world. The other aspect is for us to know our culture, our history, and language. And the problem there is that America committed cultural genocide on us in the 1800s, forbidding us to practice our religion. The net result is that a lot of our people know very little about their culture, their history, or their language. And language is the most damaging, I think, to our people. If you take the people that are in their 80s, about 80% of them speak the language. But then as you come down, about 5 years ago, we did an informal survey. And of the 400 young people on the reservation, ages 4 to 6, I asked our center directors, how many of those students in that age group could speak the language? They could only come up with 10. So that means that out of that age group, only 2.5% of that age group speaks the language. So what we're committed to is helping our students learn the language, learn their history, and learn their culture. So that's we have a dual purpose as an institution.
It sounds to me like, to a certain extent, of what Oglala Lakota College is part of its mission is to undo a lot of that damage that was done with the cultural genocide.
Well, you know, we feel that we're a beacon of hope for the reservation, because there is a lot of problems. You know, there's been the ABC programs about suicide, the abuse that occurs with our children. So there are major problems, but the one thing that is most heartening to me is when I go to graduation and I know a student who may have had a drinking problem or a drug problem. And what happens when those students want to change their lives, then they come to us to make a difference in their lives. So I always tell people that the college is a beacon of hope for our people if they want to change, make a positive change in their lives.
So is that because they've got that grounding back to their cultural heritage, that was what was missing?
Well, no, it's anybody to survive in this day and age, you have to have a good job. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things that we give our graduates. They have the ability to go in and get a teacher, get a good salary, nursing, the same thing. But as part of that also, that they get more grounded in who they are. A lot of times we ask them to do a family tree, and they have hardly any knowledge of their more traditional relatives. And then learning the songs, and then you'll be talking to some of our faculty about how we allow them to learn the songs of the Lakota people and their history. So yeah, it is right that they become more grounded in who they are as an Indian person.
And what is the role of the Lakota language and the history as a part of the curriculum here at Oglala Lakota College? Is that a requirement?
Yeah, there are 12 hours that our students have to take in Lakota studies, and that goes back to our founding members of the college. You know, they felt it was a necessity for our students to learn who they were as Indian people. You know, John Bride he was a USD professor, and he did a book on Indian psychology, and he said that Indian students in the schools did well up until the fourth grade, and then they understood that they were Indian, and they knew that the prejudice that they would encounter, and that their achievement levels fell off. The problem is that we have to make our students be proud of who they are. You know, we're Indian people. Calvin Jumping Bull, I think, made the most profound statement. He said, look at your skin. It's brown. You're always going to be brown. No matter what you do in life, you're going to be Indian. So you might as well be Indian, and don't try to be like a white man. I think that was the most profound statement that I ever heard of one of our faculty members about why it's so important to know who we are as Indian and to be Indian.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're at Oglala Lakota College on the Pine Ridge Reservation, and we're talking with President Thomas Shortbull. You mentioned the faculty. Where do the faculty come from?
Well, about 20% of our faculty are Indian people, and so we do have to go out and recruit for the areas, an accounting instructor. We do have a lot. About 80% of our faculty are non-Indian people.
Now, do they have to make an adjustment then to the educating from that Lakota perspective?
Well, the interesting thing is that we believe that our faculty have to learn this, is that that they become the most nurturing faculty you'll ever see anywhere in the country. My daughter, who went to the University of Utah to be a ballerina and it didn't work out for her, she came back and went to the School of Mines and eventually got a degree at the University of South Dakota. She said that when she came into a classroom with other Indian students, she felt like she was part of a family. Now, how often does that happen for an Indian student in a mainstream institution? You basically kind of feel kind of scared and all of that. But she said it was the most nurturing environment because the faculty were also there to help them. If students wanted to, after the class, ask questions, get some tutoring or whatever. So yeah, it is an adjustment for our faculty because our mantra is that we are a nurturing environment, not you're just one number of 100 students in a classroom.
Now, how does this contrast to your experiences then going at USD? I mean, did you go through that same struggle?
Yeah, I got my degree, but I encountered prejudice. I went to school at Provo High School, and it was kind of an interesting situation. It was almost like a Shangri-La in the sense that the people that worked there were all of the same grade level, so we were all equal. And so I didn't encounter a lot of prejudice in high school. But when I went to the University of South Dakota, some football players in front of me, and they were big brutes, start putting their mouth to the mound and, whooping and stuff like that. And what was I supposed to do, go up and beat the guys up? There was probably four or five of them and probably 250 pounds. I also had a professor that in Spanish say, we have Indians in Mexico, but they're all lazy like they are in America. So, you can see why when you go to a mainstream institution, there are times that Indian people drop out because they encounter that prejudice at mainstream institutions. And that happened to me at the University of South Dakota.
So what was it within you that made you, being one of the few that actually made it through and graduated?
Well, you have to look at the bigger picture and you have to stay that course. Even though you're going to be somewhat abused, you have to see the bigger picture. I want that degree and I'll put up with this BS just as long as I can get that degree.
In looking at the history of Oglala Lakota College through the years, particularly since 1995, have you seen some changes here? I'm just curious as how the college has evolved and what it looks like for the future.
Well, I think the one thing that we provide to the reservation is that we are one of the most positive organizations on the reservation. A lot of people come to us and say, we're glad that, we get visitors all the time, and they say we're glad that we come to OLC because we see all the positive things that the college is doing. And so we also manage the Head Start program on the reservation. We do a lot of things that's a major benefit to our tribe in providing programs that will assist them in the human resources of our reservation. So a lot of times we say Oglala Lakota College, we're there from the womb to the tomb because, we have some Head Start with early childhood that goes from the time that they're infants up until they're five-year-olds, and then we've had people that were in their 70s that got their master's degrees. So we're a major force for good on this reservation.
And a vital part of the future here.
That's right.
Well, President Shortbull, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Okay, thanks a lot.